Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast is coming your way. Pat the Designer, new to the pod, Charlie Bevins in the building, first time joining us. We got to talk Bears because the Bears are favored to get Stephon Gilmore. Second best odds. Where's he playing? We got to talk about all that. And then of all these people who were magically favored to get, who are the Bears actually going after? Going to break that down as well. All that and more in today's episode of the Chicago Bears podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page. Lead a five-star review. Y'all know what to do. Charlie, what's going on, man? Welcome to the pod, Pat? My guy.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited. Bears rookies reporting, I believe, less than a week. So, I mean, God, this is the best time of year, right? We got nothing else going on in our Chicago sports team. So, let's talk Bears. Let's do it.
I literally was like, because the Sox play at 110 today. I was like, do I want to go to the Sox game? No. Maybe I want to go to the Sox game. And I was like, I don't think I want to go to the Sox game.
Yeah, I need such perfect conditions to go to a Sox game. Like, it needs to be 73 degrees and, like, mostly sunny, but with some cloud coverage. Yeah. Other than that, the conditions have to be so specifically perfect to entice me enough to get down.
There's no chance you're going in. Yeah. I respect it. It's not worth watching right now. But we do got a team that is worth watching, and there's still some moves that we want to see them be able to make this offseason. I think a lot of people have looked at that opposite edge position for Montez Sweat. We've looked at left tackle as well as something that the Bears need to address. But we got this based on Bet Online, and The Heavy, I think, was the first article I saw put this out, that the Bears have the second best odds, plus 600, behind the Jacksonville Jaguars to sign cornerback Stephon Gilmore if he does not return to the Dallas Cowboys for the 2024 season. This is an interesting one because Gilmore, while a little bit older, still does have some really good production. But I was surprised to hear his name pop up because, in my mind, the secondary is the strength of this team.
Exactly. That I was also surprised to hear that. And when you look at, a lot of times it's, well, they have a young secondary, so let's bring in an experienced veteran. They already have that.
Yeah.
Like, Jalen Johnson's been here a while. He's on his second contract now. So, yeah, when you think about how the hierarchy of positions they need to address, I would honestly put secondary probably at the bottom of that list, even beyond, you know, that starting group, Byard, Gordon, Johnson, Stevenson, Jaquan Brisker, even a guy like Terrell Smith. Secondary that has depth, and adding somebody like Stephon Gilmore, who's going to want to start, who is going to want to play for a contender, hearing that connection, to me, I was so surprised by it, because when you look at their list of needs and how they can spend this money, it doesn't even crack I don't even think it would be something that you could even connect to. So, yeah, like, does Gilmore want to start? Does he want to mentor? I don't think so. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. That was just my main takeaway.
It's so interesting because when I see lines like this, and of course, right, people are going to run, there's no news, so you got to talk about what the news is around the team. This, to me, more so speaks to the possibility that he's probably returning to Dallas,
right,
when you see a line set like this, right? Because the team that's ahead of him is the Jaguars, and I'm like, okay, well, I kind of feel the same way there as well. I don't feel like Stephon Gilmore is the answer for the Jaguars. I don't think that he's an answer for the Chicago Bears for a need that they have right now. And I think the biggest thing with bringing a guy like in, right, you're talking about a 33-year-old who still wants to start. And the biggest question is, Bears still have two rookies who are unsigned. I don't think that that's a problem. We talked about that yesterday. Mm-hmm. But realistically speaking, what money are you paying Stephon Gilmore? Because is he coming in for $6 to $7 million? I think he still believes he's valued at a little bit more than that. I think that's the reason he hasn't signed in Dallas yet. And I think the team that's more than likely willing to cave in to his whims is the Dallas Cowboys, who maybe still have a little bit more to spend there.
Well, and I think also Dallas, they've set themselves up so poorly with Dak, CeeDee, and Parsons that they are thinking so short term. With every decision they make, they're thinking, you know, it's like they're almost panicking. They're backed into a corner. So they're saying, all right, well, while we have these guys under contract, while we don't have CeeDee Lamb on an extension, while we can squeeze a little bit under the salary cap now, let's just do it. Let's sign a 1-year deal with Gilmore. So, yeah, I mean, like, it did come with a caveat if it's not Dallas.
Yeah.
I mean, you even look beyond Dallas. Like, I would think Gilmore, ultimately money talks at the end. Like, he's going to sign with
wherever he can get the most money.
Probably. The number two most important thing is, like, this guy probably wants to win another Super Bowl. I mean, this is a guy who's been a defensive player of the year. He's won a Super Bowl in New England. He's made a lot of money playing football. Maybe he just wants to get one more. So, you know, if you're him, like, I would think that a team like Cincinnati would make a little more sense for what he's seeking. But again, a lot of these teams have much bigger questions they have to answer. Like, Cincinnati has to figure out the Ja'Marr Chase thing. Dallas has to figure out all their guys. You know, Jacksonville has to figure out what they're doing at receiver. Do they have any other options besides Brian Thomas? Where does that leave Stephon Gilmore? He's probably not a main priority for a lot of teams right now.
It's going to be, to me, the one thing, I guess, is I like to look at things from both sides, especially, right? Like, I don't believe that this is going to happen. I don't believe that the Bears are going to go out and get Stephon Gilmore. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't think it's something that, like you said, is high on Ryan Poles' list. But if you look at this from the other side, are you saying, would bringing in Stephon Gilmore be a commitment to saying, we're trying to win year one? We're trying to win right now. We can't sit here and wait around for, you know, the possibility that one of these other guys is going to come to the Bears. We have to find an answer now. And Stephon Gilmore, not for nothing, he's still a good player. He can be an answer. I guess if you would start him over anybody, right, you would want to pair him up across from Jalen Johnson, which would stifle Tyreek Stevenson a little bit. But Tyreek had a rough start to the season. I believe he gave up 9 touchdowns. I think 7 of those were before Montez Sweat got there. Last half of the season, phenomenal player. Only gave up 2, started playing better, wasn't committing as many penalties. That's the only other thing I could even think remotely that would make sense.
And that comes to, I remember when they signed Riley Reiff and they had drafted Braxton Jones, they kind of looked at it and they were like, well, if everything else is even, let's just throw the young guy out there and see what he can handle.
Yeah.
They're much better off for it. It's kind of the same thinking with Tyreek Stevenson, except you walk away from last season feeling really good about what you have with Stevenson. So if we're talking about, like you mentioned, are the Bears ready to win right now? Does Poles wonder if he's ready to win right now? If that's how he's thinking, wouldn't you think that figuring out edge rusher would be much higher on that list? Yes, I mean, like, you don't, because you can do both, right? Like, you can feel really good about your secondary coming along in this year and still try to win games. It may not be a perfect product by the end of it, but if you're still, like, this is still a development year, I would say. You want to win games, you want to be a lot better than you were. You're no longer just like, hey, let's get a better draft pick, but there is still a lot more development that needs to happen along defensive line, quarterback, and within your secondary. Like, you still have young guys that you feel really good about, but are they finished products? Probably not.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that this is a, not to say this is a nothing story, I guess it could be something. We've seen him we've seen Ryan Poles. I mean, he's done it a different way. Most teams want to build their lines first. Ryan Poles is going about building the DBs out. He's going about building out, you know, the receiver room, the running back room. He hasn't put as much emphasis into the offensive line as maybe some people would like, and the defensive line, right, as maybe some people would like. But we're seeing him do that at his pace. We've got that second round. And I think that's the other thing, too, right? When you look at a guy like Stephon Gilmore, when you look at to me, I look at, okay, like, can I get a guy who is similar in age or in stature if I need him during the season to Stephon Gilmore just by moving that second round pick next year?
Yeah.
Right, that you have, right? Like, I think the Bears have out now. You don't have to trade it for a guy like Stephon Gilmore. Like, if you're going to trade a second round pick, trade it for somebody better. But, you know what I mean? Like, you have options. I don't think that you have to focus your funds there right now. So, it'll be interesting to see what the Bears do. I don't think Gilmore is high on this list. The other thing I want to talk about on this, though, like, let's have the conversation on, because we've heard the Bears being favored to sign like 9 guys at this point. I'm being facetious here, but like, it's more guys than you would expect.
When you're fun and exciting and you have cap space, you're going to be connected to everybody.
And that's literally what we're seeing. We've heard names like Connor Williams thrown out there. We've heard names, of course, like Yannick Ngakoue, who was here last season. We've heard names, of course, now Stephon Gilmore. Emmanuel Agba is a name that's out there. If you could take one right now, if there's somebody on your list of players who, what was the other one? David Bakhtiari, who they're favored to go get as well. If you could have one out of that list of names, what's the position you're looking to address most? Who's the player you're looking to go out there and get that you think gives you the best value right now?
all of these guys are going to come with caveats just because we're so late in the calendar. That's the kind of aisle you're going to be shopping in. But I come back to Connor Williams because I don't feel great about the interior of the offensive line.
I understand.
I honestly think that if that is a position, like, I think that that should honestly be at the top of Poles's list instead of edge rusher, because for me, everything is about Caleb Williams this year. Everything is about ensuring the success of your young quarterback. And if the interior of your offensive line is in flux, like it has been, that's going to cause a lot of growing pains for him. And then you just hope that doesn't become scar tissue. But like Nate Davis, I mean, if you go through another training camp with what they had last year, like, you're not going to feel great about that spot going into it. Coleman Shelton, Ryan Bates, those are fine people. Like, sure, maybe you see something that you saw something nobody else saw, but I don't think that should be preventative from going out and signing and trying to improve along the interior of your offensive line. And then Tevin Jenkins, he's great when he's on the field. He just can't stay healthy. Yeah. So if you're insulating yourself from risk of harming your quarterback's development, I think every step should be taken to do that. And maybe that comes with sort of sacrificing the other edge spot. But like, does that maybe put a limit on your ceiling? Yeah. But this isn't a team that I think is trying to win a Super Bowl or anything like that. Once we're into that next step, then yeah, like, we really got to figure out the edge rusher. But right now, if I'm thinking short term, if I'm thinking this year, everything comes back to Caleb Williams and making sure that he is okay. I mean, Waddle mentioned this earlier today on Cap and Jay Hood, recording this on Wednesday. He said that interior pressure for young guys, like, it's really hard for them. And, and I don't disagree with him that probably really stunted Justin Fields' growth. And Caleb Williams is, you know, he's not short, but he ain't tall. You know, he's 6'1". Like, if you can shore up the middle of your offensive line and just feel really good about if one of these guys go down, which they do a lot, especially Tevin Jenkins, if you feel good about, well, we have a backup plan, I think that that is the most ideal way of going about it. And again, like, Connor Williams is coming off a knee injury, but this is the sort of position you put yourself in when you have so many holes you need to plug and there are only so many avenues to fill them for an NFL team.
Connor Williams is one that I am heavily intrigued by. The one question that I have is, do you risk putting your rookie quarterback out there with a center who's not going to be out there until week one? Mm-hmm. That's the biggest question. And not to say that, of course, right, you go through the season, these guys can't figure it out. I do believe that that would be the case, that they would get to that point. But you're taking a chance on a guy who's coming off of an ACL tear. You're taking a chance on a guy who is, you know, he's had some issues with injury in his career and coming off a major one now. Big guys usually don't continue to get healthier, mm-hmm. right? We've seen that with Tevin Jenkins. But he's a good center. And realistically speaking, he's a center. That's one thing that right now I think you've got a question mark at. Coleman Shelton wouldn't be on this team if he was a phenomenal center for the Rams right now.
Yeah,
Ryan Bates is a right guard.
Yeah.
I don't care until he proves that he's a center, he's a right guard.
Yeah. And don't you, I mean, like, a center does so much more than just snap the ball and get in a blocking position. Especially
now, I will take that at a minimum right now because we didn't have that last
after last year. You know what I mean? Last 2 or 3 years. Yeah. But I mean, even just beyond those, you know, things we think of with the center, he's calling out protections, he's doing this, he's doing that. He can take a lot off of a rookie quarterback's plate when, you know, a rookie quarterback has to do so much, and pairing a young quarterback with a veteran center, I think, is a very smart way of going about things. I mean, the Chargers did that with Justin Herbert and Corey Lindsey.
Yeah.
Corey Lindsey might retire, but like, you get the point where this guy has seen so much NFL football. He knows what certain defenses are going to bring. He knows what certain looks look like that maybe Caleb Williams hasn't seen before. And having that mind to sort of lean on, I think it's something that right now the Bears don't have. They don't have a certainty at center. And the more variables you minimize heading into the season, I think the better off they're going to be this year for Caleb Williams and long-term for his development.
Yeah, and I think the center position is one that we've been talking about for how many years? I mean, like, let's be real. The last center we had is Kyle Long when he was kind of in there. I mean, I guess
Roberto Garza had some pretty good years here before him, those old recruits. But I mean, look, like, this is you go back to the color years, you've never felt great about the offensive line here.
Yeah.
And maybe there's been some, like, Kyle Long was a great guard, but he's somebody who is always moving up and down.
He was moving everywhere on the offensive line.
And I mean, God bless him. He did a pretty good job everywhere he went. But
Yeah, like Cody Whitehair, you never...
Cody Whitehair was solid.
He was another guy...
Made a Pro Bowl, I guess.
He was another guy, though. They were constantly moving around, and they just never felt set there. And, you know, I get the thinking of undervaluing interior offensive linemen because they are replaceable, but I just think stability at your center position for a young quarterback, in my mind, it just goes such a long way in helping that guy.
Man, I'm telling you, dog, I would have loved Jackson Powers Johnson, who, yes, I brought him back up. Yes, I brought him back up because he's killing it at camp. That's why I brought him back up.
Mean man.
He's dominating out at camp, but I am happy that we have Roma Dunze. I'm not mad at it. I just, to me, having that, and Connor Williams is what? He's 27 years old?
Yeah.
So there's still some room there to grow. There's still some ability out there. Like, I wouldn't be mad at that. I think, if anything, right, the Stephon Gilmore conversation to me is a wash. Like, we could put that straight out the window. Like, I don't want Stephon Gilmore on the Bears. Like, if he's here, fine, but like, I'm not beating my chest. Like, this is a great signing because you've got names out there on the edge, on the interior line that upgrades your team massively to me. And I think that you can't miss on that. Like, Yannick Ngakoue has been one that I've been high on bringing back. I think he's the perfect number two for Montez Sweat. He also is a guy who I think can help develop Austin Booker. And so I think that he brings some intensity there. If I was going to rank it 1, 2, and 3, does Gilmore even break the three? I would probably go, Yannick, Connor Williams, and I'd honestly probably rather have David Bakhtiari than freaking Stephon Gilmore. Yeah. And I'm not confident in David Bakhtiari being on that list either, guys.
I mean, with Bakhtiari, like, Braxton Jones is a nice player. I don't think he's preventative. He's good enough to prevent you from doing anything at left tackle. If you feel like you can get better than Braxton Jones, you should do it, especially if Bakhtiari is going to come at a discount. Again, like, the guy has missed a lot of football games.
He's played 25 games
in
4 seasons. That's tough.
Yeah. So, you know, you just don't feel great about that. But I mean, along the defensive line, like, I think if the Bears wanted to bring back Ngakoue, they probably already would have. He's somebody who's just signed 1 year deals after 1 year deals. And it's like, does he just enjoy being a free agent? Is there something more there that maybe we're not hearing about? I don't know. But for me, like, I was very interested in Calais Campbell. He's with the Dolphins.
Yes.
I am now interested in the guy that Calais Campbell was brought in to replace, which is Emmanuel Ogba. He's somebody who he signed an extension with Miami, and like, it never got back to as good as it did get. But when you're a team that just needs just a little more juice along your pass rush, he's somebody that he is what he is. He's not going to come in and somehow get 10 sacks, but just another option. Maybe he's improved by being across from Montez Sweat. Maybe, like you said, with the development of Austin Booker, maybe he can be a part of a rotation that you end up actually feeling very confident in your pass rush. I don't know what that answer is, but, you know, it's kind of a been there, done that with Ngakoue. Maybe they do ultimately bring him back. Maybe I'm just reading too much into it, but...
Ngakoue was brought here late last season, right? I mean, we had already started training camp last year by the time Yannick was brought in.
Yeah.
So I think that you could see him, and we know the Bears want a discount here. They don't have much money left once they sign the two rookies. I believe
it seems like this is how. It seems like this is how Ngakoue does business too. Is he just kind of waits a pretty long time to sign?
He's like, hey, listen, I know
call
my
when
price is going down.
Yeah.
But you let me know when you want me to come back. All right. We'll wait until it's at as low as possible. I think the only thing about Emmanuel Ogba to me that gives me pause is, are you just signing a body to have a body?
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't bad in the NFL, by the way. If you've got a body that can be a productive body, guys get hurt. It's not a bad thing to have a body just to have a body. But is Emmanuel Ogba that much different than a DeMarcus Walker, who's already got that starting opposite position? You're not spending the money there, right? Like, I would, if I'm going out and getting Emmanuel Ogba, DeMarcus Walker can just have the starting position, let Austin Booker back him up and try and figure some things out. Now, the part that sucks about that is, and why I think even on both sides of the ball, right? If I'm looking at Connor Williams, if I'm looking at David Bakhtiari, if I'm looking at Yannick Ngakoue, there's, to me, with those three, there's an opportunity of like, well, if he's healthy, he's a monster, right? If Yannick Ngakoue is healthy and he can go, he's been a 9 to 10 sack guy. If Connor Williams is healthy, he's an elite level center, right? If David Bakhtiari is healthy, he's one of the best left tackles in the NFL. Like, you don't get that with Emmanuel Agba. So that would be the only thing that would give me pause about bringing him in. Bringing a body in to have one, which again, isn't bad because you do need depth. You have, like, if Montez Sweat goes down, the defensive line is dead again.
Right.
You have no depth.
Yeah. And I like what you said about DeMarcus Walker because, yeah, like, at a certain point, you know, are you just stunting your own player's development? Are you stunting a guy like Austin Booker? I mean, I think we kind of know what Dominique Robinson is at this point.
That new kickoff rule is going to be phenomenal for him.
A lot of jobs are going to be made by the new kickoff rule. But yeah, I think I think you make a really good point. Like, what do you want your pass rush to be? What do you want the goal of this season to be? Do you want it to be another develop? Like, obviously, you wanted to see a lot of guys take steps forward, but do you want to do that at the risk of actually, like, being fairly competitive? I mean, this is a team that, you know, I mean, Detroit's one of the two or three best teams in the NFC. I don't think you're stealing the division away from them. But this is a team that wants to be probably in the playoffs, probably getting that last wild card spot. I mean, the PFF projections came out today. They have them right around that third wild card spot.
Yeah.
So do you want to be just that, or do you want to be like, hey, like, We can give the Lions a scare. You know, we can take that second spot back from Green Bay. And if you want to be that, then you probably have to be a little more active in how you go out or a little more proactive in how you address your other pass rush spot. Do you make another trade?
Yeah.
Maybe the Raiders are just, you know what? We don't like what we are right now in terms of our trajectory. Maybe Max Crosby is a name that becomes available. You got Khalil Mack. I mean, why not do it again?
I'd take Khalil Mack back if we're being honest.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, these guys, they come loose pretty often. I thought last year was a little bit of an outlier just because you had Chase Young and Montez. Like, you had two pass rushers from the same team all of a sudden become available. I don't know if you're going to see that again, but, you know, Ryan Poles is somebody who likes to work the trade phone and the trade deadline.
Oh yeah, he's gonna move some pieces,
and he's gonna, you know, if he looks at this team and is like, hey, we can make a push, you know, we can do something, maybe he does pick up that phone and make a few calls around the trade deadline to try to get this thing a little bit more over the finish line.
That would be interesting to see, and I've said this many times, I don't think that second round pick sticks with us by the time the draft is here, because I think the Bears will be, and at least my hope is that we'll be in a position to where it's like, okay, we actually need to be buyers, not sellers
right
here at the deadline. We need to be, because right, if you're selling, like, you're in a spot right now where you brought Keenan Allen in. I don't know if you're re-signing Keenan Allen. I love Keenan Allen. I love what he can be here. I got Rome Odunze. If he balls out, and I think that based on how everybody's talking about Rome, it's very much like, it's not about if he balls out, it's about when it clicks for him to ball out.
Right.
Like, are we re-signing a guy like Keenan Allen back to this team? You're probably trying to allocate those funds elsewhere. I could see the Bears going out and saying, maybe we move on from Keenan if you're not in a winning position and try to add some assets. But if you're winning, don't be surprised if you see a second-round pick, that second-round pick that comes from Carolina, which – they're going to be bad. So
yeah,
it's going to be high.
Well, and maybe Keenan Allen, you know, maybe he's making, I think, the $23 million a year. He's not going to be making that next year. Maybe he is willing to take a little bit less because he sees himself in an environment where they can go compete for a Super Bowl. I mean, I know it's scary to say out loud. It sounds so crazy to be like, hey, next year.
Not when he just signed with Clutch.
But dude, look, like, oh yeah, there you go. But I mean, like, we weren't talking about the Texans in any sort of content. Like, we did not last year, we did not expect to be going into this season thinking the Texans are a team that could make a run at a Super Bowl.
Absolutely not.
And when you're drafting somebody with Caleb Williams' pedigree, like, it's not, maybe not expected, but to have hopes that he can be what CJ Stroud was his rookie year. CJ Stroud had basically the best rookie year of all time. I'm not saying that Caleb Williams is going to come in and do that, but if he does something like that, and we're just like, dude, we finally got a quarterback. We feel awesome about what we have a quarterback. Next year, like, yeah, you're going to be buying. You're going to be using that second round. You're going to be thinking about leveraging that second round pick in ways you probably didn't expect.
And I think that's why you don't want to commit long-term money to a lot of these guys, right? Like, to me, I'm looking at the draft next season. I'm like, okay, well, that's where we're going to get our opposite edge rusher. So you're trying to find a one-year fix. You're not trying to find a five-year guy here in the draft or in free agency right now. You're looking for a guy that can be, hey, like this season, we need you to be solid at that position. Come do a job.
Yeah.
And then next season, you have a great life because we're going to draft your replacement probably in the first round where there's going to be a lot more options for the Bears because the hope is you got a lot less questions. So
it's a good edge rusher class next year, too.
It's a really good edge rusher class. I'm really excited to see what the Bears are going to be able to get out of there. Let's finish it off with this, though. You kind of mentioned it, PFF having the Bears finish off with that last wild card spot. Right now, I believe they still have them at about 8.5 wins, which what's the half wins? What are we – is everything
– 8 or 9, I guess.
How do you get a half win here? Like, what are we doing? Is it 8? Is it 9? Let me know. But what is it going to take – for the Chicago Bears to either meet or exceed that number, which both would be an improvement based off what we've seen from this team?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a couple. I mean, they are playing last place schedule. That helps. There's going to be
definitely helps.
There's going to be one or two games that they lose that they just should not have lost
every year.
Like, and that's going to happen. That's probably going to happen more times than it should for a team that's still trying to, again, like the arrow is still pointing up on them. I mean, I look at that Tennessee week one game. We're going to have such high expectations. They're going to be favored. And, you know, week one is weird. Titans have a lot of veterans on that team. Like, the Titans want to win football games right now. So, you know, those are the kinds of games I can see them be like, oh, God. You know, maybe a team that has one more year of experience wins that kind of game. But they're going to have to pick off some of these harder to win games ultimately. Like, if you want to exceed that total, you're going to have to win one of these sort of toss-up-y games, like against the Rams. Yeah. Like, that, those are the types of games you're going to have to win that maybe you go into them, you're 1.5, 2-point underdog, and you walk out and you're just like, man, they kind of kicked their ass today. You know, like, you're going to have to win those types of games. You're going to have to steal a couple from your division. You're going to have to take one from Detroit. You're going to have to take one from Green Bay. You're probably going to have to win 2-2 against Minnesota. I don't know how that ultimately shakes out, but yeah, you're going to have to. You're going to have to minimize the dumb games, I think. You're going to have a couple. That's just the NFL. It's going to happen. But you're going to have to really clamp down on, like, God, they just lost to who?
Yeah, yeah.
You just want as few of those games as possible.
And to me, just clean up the mistakes. And I'm talking about the coaching staff, right? Of course, the players got to clean up the mistakes. But, like, I've said this a couple times over the last few weeks, but it's like Justin Jones shouldn't be dropping back into coverage twice for two touchdowns scored on his head. You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't be losing games 9 weeks apart, or what is it, from week four to week 11. Yeah, I mean, the same way. You shouldn't be losing those style of games because of coaching decisions where it's like at the end of the day. And that's my biggest question. I don't even know if my biggest question coming into this season is Caleb Williams. Of course, the players are, but I really have a lot of questions for Flus.
Because
I have not forgotten the 14 losses in a row.
The 14 losses, the fourth quarter meltdowns last year. I mean, you could probably make an argument that what is Matt Eberflus is one of the biggest questions around the NFL right now, because this is year three.
Like, he's a solid fade and a great beard. That's what he is right now.
Got to start winning games. And it is funny. I mean, I was talking about this with a friend the other day. Like, we don't know how good of a in-game manager Eberflus is, because we've never really seen a whole lot of games where it's like, oh my God, if he used all his timeouts, because they've been out of so many games that he's almost gotten lucky in that sense. Like, we haven't been able to all admonish him for, you know, timeout usage or stuff like that. There's been a couple moments, but, like, I'm curious to see how he handles those sorts of in-game decision makings in games that matter, frankly.
Yeah, my thing that I really want to see is just be the – I understand you're the defensive coordinator, but you can't forget you're the head coach. And I felt like there were too many times last season where I looked at Flus and I was like, you're not being the head coach. Like, there's no way in that Detroit game you throw the football one time the entire fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And the one pass is the pass to, or I'm sorry, not the fourth quarter, the entire second half, should I say. And the one pass is the pass to Tyler Scott that he drops that would have been a dot. Right? Like, you can't be so focused on what the defense is doing that you don't look over at your OC and go, hey, like, they're coming back. You want to put the ball in the air a little bit here, guy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, those are the moments to me where it's like, and not to say that I want him overstepping, not to say I want him sitting there going to Shane Waldron every play and being like, hey, we need to run the ball, we need to pass the ball, like, you're not doing your job. But as a head coach, there are those moments where you do need to step in and say, hey, like, What are we doing? This one's getting away from us. What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's something that can be a little underrated because we're so worried about player development, but coaching development is a thing too.
Yeah.
I mean, how Eberflus has evolved as a coach till now, as opposed to when he got hired. I know he's got the beard, he's got the fade now, but like, does he just, I mean, I think the perfect example is training camp. You know, last year, everybody walked away from that training camp being like, what was that? That was a 7-on for 4 hours. Like, so that's sort of one of the things I'm looking for is, do we walk away and being like, man, they were on the move at practice today. Like, that was a physical practice that we just watched. That's the kind of thing that as Eberflus grows and matures as a coach, maybe he does take a step back and say, hey, what we did last offseason doesn't work. Let's change how we approach it this offseason.
No, 100%. That's the first thing I'm looking at. Like, I'm going to tell you this right now. If they're like, they were very, listen, year one, I've been to training camp the last 4 years, right? Year one of it, they were very like, nobody stand still. Run as fast as you can. You got to be after it. And because year one was very, we're trying to lose, there were a lot of people trying to make the team. So you're going to get guys that are going to work a little bit harder when you don't have the veterans. But you got the guys that are going hard. But year two, it was like, I'm fine with you taking a step back because maybe guys are a little bit more comfortable. But like, it was like, the play's over. We're walking off the sideline.
Yeah.
Like that, it can't be that drastic of a difference. And then they literally basically said, we don't care about preseason.
Yeah. And I think that's, I don't mind that as much. I mean, like, because you do see some teams do it, like the 49ers, the Rams, they all started doing this, but
49ers and Rams win, though.
Exactly.
At the beginning of the season.
That kind
of
stuff is earned, too, right? I mean, like, it goes back to, like, Andy Reid infamously runs the most brutal practices of any offseason at this point. Andy Reid's got a lot of pellets on the wall.
Yeah.
Andy Reid's got 3 Super Bowls. He's won basically since he's been a head coach. That kind of stuff you get to do when players can look at you, they can look at your rings, they can look at your accomplishments, at your accomplishments and say, hey, I'm going to put my trust in this guy. I don't know if Eberflus is there yet. And how he figures out how to get to that spot, I think it's probably the biggest question facing his tenure.
No, 100%. We'll see. I mean, like, that's to me, if Flus is the head coach that we think he is, or hope he is, I should say, I don't know if I think he is yet. I can see the Bears finding their way to a 10 to 11 win season. If he's the guy that we saw last season, you're going to underachieve. He wasn't good enough. Like that's just like Justin Fields wasn't good enough. Just like Luke Getsy wasn't good enough. Matt Eberflus wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You lost 3 of those games last year on defensive blunders. 100%. Like, yeah, Justin Fields threw interceptions at the end of the game that like put you in bad positions and cost you to lose the game. But it's because of defensive blunders to finish those games out. You blew a 28 to 3 lead going into half versus Denver, I think it was, or 28-7, something like that. It was a huge lead.
On the heels of Denver allowing 70 points.
Yes, on heels of Denver allowing 70 points, you blew a 31-14 lead to the Lions in the last 3 minutes of a football game.
And that's something you teach. Yeah, that comes back to the coaching staff because it is up to the players to execute. A coaching staff shows their team how to finish games.
Yeah.
And we didn't see that last year.
We didn't see it. So we'll see if we see it this year. Hopefully we do. I'm so glad that we can stop getting these half games and projections coming soon. We're almost there, Bears fans. Stay tuned in with us because we're going to have you covered here Monday through Friday. As always, it's your boy, Pat the Designer, joined by Charlie Bevins in the building. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you, Pat.
This week, Charlie. And we'd love to have you back anytime, Absolutely. My guy. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below. What is your win projection for the Chicago Bears this season? Don't you give me half games. I will be after you in the comments. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down. Peace.